Well, welcome everyone to this October 20th special meeting of the Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. And we have all members present, so we have a quorum. So we'll call this meeting to order. And if you may, please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thanks. Are there any announcements or presentations by staff at this time?
Other than those on the agenda, no.
Okay. And I don't believe we have any by any of the committee members. So let's move to public comment. Does anyone from the public wish to speak on anything that's not on the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Steve McElvain. I'm the owner of the Rancho Colina site. Tomorrow morning, the City Council is going to be considering the pricing and terms of payment for the Rancho Colina site in a closed session. So I thought that would give me an opportunity to make a couple of comments that I think that needs to be taken to the City Council members. And it also gives you the opportunity at the end of this particular meeting, under your general comments, if you have any thoughts on the issue. The last time that I appeared before the City Council, the project that we'd originally started with is 5 acres, which all of you are familiar with, had grown to about 11 acres in our first MOU, and then Black & Veatch came out with a drawing that was 16.3 acres, and then another MOU came out with 21 acres, which was totally unacceptable to our family. You know, the original idea is you need a site for the water reclamation facility, that's fine. If you need a site to put in some water treatment facilities, that's fine. So they got a little carried away on that, but we're working on that particular thing with Mike and John on their side, and we're trying to come to some resolution. But basically where we are right now is an 8-acre piece from the RV park up to the creek, which is about adjacent to my current facilities. And that should house that facility, but it's not going to take in corporation yards and a lot of the other stuff the city was looking at. One of the other issues that I think needs to be ironed out, because if the city has to have 21 acres, we're not going to give up that much of our ranch to the city, to accommodate the city. And the Rigetti site's still available. It's one that's been approved by the Coastal Commission. As some of you already know, Chevron's selling most of the Toro Creek Valley right now, so there's a lot of land there. But the second issue that I hope the council will talk about is in the MOUs they talk about a pro rata share. If we're talking about what the city wants to pay for the price on the land, we also need to arrive at what the pro rata share is, because the original reason that I made land available to the community was we would eventually get water and sewer facilities for Rancho Colina. Well, what happened within the concept of pro rata share, I don't know what that's going to cost. And if putting in a 10-foot or 50-foot lateral from the line that goes right down Highway 41 going to the wastewater plant is going to be $4.5 million, then no, I'm not interested in spending that kind of money just to have the water flow out. And the other problem within the MOU documents that I have right now, there's a section in there that in 5.A, in the second sentence in there, if you read it literally, anything that's in this document that's not in compliance is basically taken out and everything else stands. Well, one of those things is providing water and sewer to Rancho Colina. And if you look at the current laws, if I sign that document today, it's not allowed. So you take that out, so I'd get nothing out of this deal other than a large facility in my front yard. The second problem within the MOU is the fact of water itself. When I first started, we said, well, we can get water and sewer services. I thought the line would be run out in a couple of years. The park would be paying the same rates as everybody else in Morro Bay, and I'd have access to emergency water. Well, it's been 2 years. And now if you look at the timeline that they talk about within the MOU, we don't get it until the plant's in operation. That's 2021. That's if everything works perfect. So that's 6 years, maybe seven, and it might be eight before we can even do it, even though water's running right past the park. So I hope that the city council take us a few moments to take a look at that issue. And the reason I bring it up here is you're the guys that are picking these sites, and I really appreciate your input into all of this process because you've taken the time and the diligence to make this thing work, and I think it can still work. I'm hopefully not out of the process, but we'll see what happens tomorrow. And thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Could I ask him a question?
Sure.
What's his name? Mr. McElhaney, could I ask you just a real quick question? It's an easy one.
Yes, sir.
Haven't you discussed any of these issues with any of the city staff before this is going to be going to a vote tomorrow?
Yes.
And there was no resolution on any of these issues?
The people that I've talked to are not going to be inside of the closed session, to my knowledge. I think only the city council and the city manager are going to be there. I don't know. It's closed session.
And
that's what's on the agenda.
Expand,
anyway.
Cause,
yeah.
Go ahead.
If I could jump in. Staff will be in that meeting tomorrow with council to discuss. And so we will be discussing the... it will be available to, and we'll, you know, we met with the McElvain family on Friday too to address, to discuss some of their concerns, and those were the concerns that were conveyed to us Friday. So we've shared those with the city manager and also with council, and then we'll have our team will be there tomorrow to meet with the city and discuss.
That's good.
Yes, sir.
And would you concur that these matters are closed session negotiations that are beyond the scope of our advisory committee?
I could not speak to the legality of closed session, but or your involvement. But I would say that, you know, I'll have to ask.
I mean, if closed session is not disclosed, how can we advise on what we don't know about? So
yeah.
I would think it's beyond our scope, the negotiations.
The closed session topic is basically price and terms of the negotiation, and that any result of that closed session will be reported out after that meeting. So and any finalization of anything will happen in open session.
And just another comment, please, regarding terms and conditions. I believe our committee, at least I know I have mentioned that probably about a year ago, about the negotiating the terms and conditions. To me, this is just contract negotiation. I assume Mr. McElwain has his own representative and that you could strike the language or change the language as appropriate in those documents rather than this having to be settled at the 11th hour. Just a general comment.
It is a draft document, and we continue to work back and forth on, as with most contracts, it goes back
exactly.
And forth a few times before you end up with what the final document will look like.
Thank you.
Great. This is an exciting meeting. We have another public comment speaker. I'm excited. Please come forward.
What's next?
The record.
Whoopee Morro Bay. Marla Jo Breton-Sadowski, and... I would like to use my public comment time to alert the community that Dynergy Fugro have secured a permit to do low energy acoustic survey testing. And on the overhead there, you'll see it's right next to the Morro Rock and in the Morro Rock surf spot area. And it goes up to the high and low tide lines on Morro Bay Beach and a part of the California State Beach that connects there and then outward. By law and the requirements of the California State Lands Commission, their ocean geophysical permit program. Public notification of these tests is of paramount importance. And I'll give you a little blip here. Because low-energy geophysical surveys result in the presence of survey vessels and associated equipment that may interrupt or affect other ocean users in the survey area, it is important to ensure interested and affected parties are aware that a survey will be taking place. And what they have in place to for that public notification is that the permittee is required to provide a 21-day notice of survey activities via email or regular mail to the U.S. Coast Guard local notice to mariners, as well as to harbor masters and dive shops located in or near the survey area. This ensures that local entities and individuals who may not be aware of the OGPP are alerted of upcoming geophysical activities in their area. I'm chairperson of Coast Alliance, and it's Coast Alliance's adamant opinion that the pre-survey 21-day notice has not been properly circulated in our community. As of last week, the Coast Guard did not have a public posting of this, and the Harbor Master Office in Morro Bay did not have the 21-day pre-survey notice on their public notice board in the office. So we're asking for an injunction to stop this testing, which was planned to start yesterday, go through the week. We're asking different agencies to hold the permit until the 21-day notice can be given, and that we can take a look at the actual permit and what's going to be going on. And also, most important is to alert the users of that beach area, surfers, just take that they may be jumping into waters that have something in them that they aren't bargaining for as far as the energy. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Any other comments before we move on? Dale, do you have a comment?
Can I make a comment about what Steve talked about? Or
sure.
Well, I want to know, why do we have to have a corporate yard out there? Couldn't there be one put in Morro Bay on already city-owned property, like where the dump site is, where they have all the dirt piled up, instead of having more traffic go up 41? I mean, there's already enough going up that way. Make a smaller project and less visible to the public.
Are we talking about that in the facilities master plan at all in the presentation?
Probably not that detail. I think I can answer it pretty quickly. The council established goals for the project. The primary goal is a wharf facility, and there's also secondary goals if they happen to work on that site. So it's not essential to the project, and it will be winnowed out as we move forward. So if a corporate yard doesn't work on that site, but a wharf does, we have to, you know, bring that to council. If they're, you know, willing to keep the wharf there and continue to move forward, that's what we'll do. Like all the other ones, like the energy recovery, you know, kind of the secondary one. If it works out on site, yes, it will be put there. But if not, that's a secondary goal other than doing a water reclamation facility. So it'll be up to council to make those decisions as we move forward with the project.
I'll chime in too. Part of the facility master planning effort was to look at other potential uses for a site. It included things like the corp yard, among others. It doesn't mean that there's any commitment to necessarily do that there. We're just looking at options.
Well, didn't that just be in the
5 or 8 acres that it was originally, if it worked on that, not making it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger?
So, yeah, again, the charge from council was to, you know, to look at other potential uses for the site. So, I mean, that's kind of what we analyzed. But, I'm not sure how.
Sure. To give it a little context, I think what Black and Veatch's charge was, take the council goals and take those facilities that they talked about, how, and try to come up conceptually with an idea, how could they fit on a site? How much land would it really take to do all those things? And so I think it's not accurate to say, well, we've expanded the site to include all this. It's, let's first figure out what it would take to do, then figure out, well, can we or should we get that much land? There's going to be trade-offs between the facilities we need, the cost, the land involved. But right now we're in the middle of figuring all that out. So we're just not quite there yet at this point.
So in other words, you don't know.
I think that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jenny.
I have a related question. I'm just curious, what is the footprint of the current Morro Bay facility, and also what is the footprint for the new Los Osos facility?
Our existing wastewater treatment plant is somewhere around 7 acres, I think, in total. I don't know what the Los Osos footprint
is. I don't know
is.
Either. Yeah, sorry. It's
bigger than the existing plant, I know. They didn't have as probably the site constraints, so they gave themselves a look like, after visiting the site, sufficient elbow room to actually work there, too.
I got a quick question, Rob, if you could. What I'm hearing is you did have Black and Veatch look at these different goals that the city council is looking for and how much land would be required. Did they do anything that gave like the fallback, just the wastewater reclamation, you know, stripping the rest of it and trying to figure out how much land's truly needed for the primary goal, I'll call it?
Yes, each of those are kind of a, we have the acreage needed for the WERF facilities and then also for those ancillary facilities separately. So we know what it will take.
Well, I mean, we've kind of gone under the predication it's going to be at the Rancho Colina site, not the Rigetti site or any other site that was brought up. But I'm also hearing the landowner, and he seems pretty perturbed where he's at in this point in space. So it does cause me a little bit of concern how that's going to hash out at the end of the day and what the city could truly give up to try and still work and make it come together, if you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think we're right in the middle of that.
Okay. I let you do your jobs. Thank you.
I got a quick question. How can you decide how much land you need if you haven't picked a technology yet?
That's a good point. Well, I was getting ready to jump in and say it's, you know, determining how much space you need is a function of, first, what technology you're going to have, how much space might be available, because it's typically less expensive to kind of spread things out and give yourself a little more room. And also a function of, you know, the aesthetics, how things are going to look. So there are a number of things that go into that decision. You can fit a full treatment facility in a very small footprint if you absolutely have to, but it typically can cost more. That's kind of the general comment. So it just depends on, you know, you got to balance all these things before you come out with a site plan. So we're just not there yet.
But we do know, based generally, what types of treatment technology we're looking at because of the end use of the water. So it's probably not ponds. It's probably not oxidation ditches because the end product that you end with doesn't, you have to do so much work after you're done with that secondary to get it to tertiary and reclamation standards. We're probably looking at I'll just say it, MBR or conventional activated sludge followed by microfiltration is the things that are probably most likely to lend itself to what the end use of the reclaimed water will be.
Yeah, and to chime in too, part of what Black and Veatch will present today is what they've done in terms of process analysis so far. So you'll get an idea of where we're at this moment in time on that.
Great. Anything else? I just want to, since we're talking about this, the first speaker mentioned that the Rigetti site was approved by the Coastal Commission, and just want to clarify that there's been no site approved by the Coastal Commission. We're working to get there.
Yes, they've given us their indication on types of things that they would be looking for in a final approval, and I think either one of those locations out there in the Moro Valley would work for that. So both the Rigetti property and the Rancho Colina property. Basically, they're further away and outside of the concerns that the Coastal Commission have with the existing site.
Okay, thank you. All right, moving on to consent calendar. Any comments on consent calendar, which is approval of the minutes from October 6th?
I just got one comment. My comments at the last meeting were made with regards to the financing. I guess you could just get them on YouTube, right? You have to make, if you want your comments in the minutes, you'd have to put them in the right section.
Yeah, the minutes are just a synopsis of what took place at the meeting. The YouTube videos are the actual record. Okay, we have a motion and a second, but before we vote, do we have any public comment? You take public comment on consent. No. All right. Voice vote, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Vote. Aye.
None? Mr. Woodson? Sorry about that. Old business, item B1, updates from our subcommittees. Going in order here, finance, do you have any update from now in the last meeting? Looks like you may. Yeah, go ahead, Jenny.
Yeah, I just had one announcement. Just wanted to let you know that the Water Smart, there's a funding opportunity through Reclamation, and this was actually identified by our consultant, but it just hit the street on October 16th. So basically, Bureau of Reclamation this year is looking to fund 5 to 10 projects and proposals. I know we're nowhere near ready to do something like this, but just for your information, they're due December 10th. And what I do think is interesting is since 1992, approximately $629 million and federal funding through the Title 16 program has been leveraged with non-federal funding to implement more than $3 billion in water reuse improvements. And the President's FY16 budget request included a $20 million request for the Title 16 program. So I'm thinking that maybe if it were to happen where we tied the two phases together, this seems to be the time frame in the fall when Bureau of Reclamation puts out this this notice.
Thank you. Environmental, any updates?
No, we have nothing to report.
Okay, thank you. And engineering?
Nothing to report at this point.
Okay. Well, any public comment on the finance update, I suppose? No, seeing none, we'll move on to yes.
Hi, Marla Jo Bratan-Sadowski. The last WRF CAC meeting, I think there was discussion about the Prop 1 funding, and someone made a comment that funding program wasn't available yet, and I just wanted to correct that. As far as the Ocean Protection Council Prop 1 funding, they approved the guidelines September 22nd, and they're open to receiving letters of intent. So, thanks.
Thank you. All right, this is receive and consider update, so we're going to move on to item C, new business, and that's the facility master plan update.
Thank you. I'm going to introduce Steve Felmy with Black & Veatch, and also in the audience we have Marty Garza-Bird and Christy Coleman, who are also with Black & Veatch. So Black & Veatch started, as you all know, middle of July on the facility master plan. They've been putting together some preliminary analysis that together with our team, looking at a variety of different aspects of the master plan. So Steve's going to give an update today. The purpose today is he's going to give you an update on where we are overall with facility master plan, and what he has also brought two of the technical memoranda for your review, and these have been reviewed by staff. We've made comments, so you're seeing the version that we've kind of all worked on together, and he's providing those for comments from WRFCAC. And the purpose today really is to give you the overview, respond to questions. In January we have the final facility master plan, and a draft will be coming in the December time frame. So you will see all the analysis for all the master planning work all together one place in December. But we didn't think it was fair to hit you right before Christmas with, or the holidays, with a massive document for review. Yeah. So what we're trying to do is give you pieces and parts of it. These tech memoranda basically become chapters in the facility master plan. It's kind of how that works. So we want to bring you the ones that are really the most pertinent, that we feel like require most input and thought from the committee over the next couple of months, to give you all a chance to review and provide comment. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Steve.
Yeah, an early holiday present for you all to enjoy. My name's Steve Felmy. I'm the project manager for the Black & Veatch team, and Mike's done a very good job of introducing the subject. The agenda for the quick presentation, just an overview of what the master plan is, our scope, the status of the various work documents that we've completed so far, and then really the next step to wrap it up. And ultimately, the focus is to deliver that draft facility master plan to Mike on my mother's birthday, December 11th. And that'll be time enough for you then to finish it up and have it ready to go for the new year. So we already talked about the purpose of the presentation today. First of all, the facility master plan, what is its purpose? What's the objective? And basically, it's to provide a roadmap for the new plant. I mean, there's two phases associated with this. The phase one is primarily the focus of the master plan. There's also a master reclamation plan that's in the works, and that'll talk about phase two, where you get into all of the what we do with the reclamation and reuse components. This is just a listing of our scope of work tasks right out of our contract. Just there for reference. Again, all of it ties into the one document that really matters at the end of the day, and that's the facility master plan document itself. To get to that document,
Steve, I noticed at the end of your presentation you have Q&A.
Yes.
So how do you want to structure your presentation? Do you want questions as we go along,
whatever,
or would you want to wait and then address them later?
I am happy to respond to, I mean, if you have questions, please ask them at any
point.
Just
step up, huh?
Absolutely. Okay. That's a good comment. I should have made that comment right up front. This is intended to be interactive. We're here to provide information to you. So whatever questions, if I can answer them, we will have more of our technical leaders here for in about 2 weeks to, when we get into the details, we get some of the comments back from you. Then we will get into a much more detailed discussion of some of the technical aspects at that time. This is intended to be much more of an overview type of a discussion. Is that okay? Okay. So anyway, what I was starting to say on this slide is this is the nine technical memorandums or technical documents that our team is preparing. And it's a joint effort with the program managers as well as the city staff. We prepare the documents. We've had workshops over most of these technical documents, technical memos, excuse me. And then we reach a consensus and go back from with we review comments and finalize them. what you see here are the elements that will ultimately feed into the facility master plan itself. And so it's very important components for us to understand in each of these pieces as we go forward. Just a quick status summary of those 9 technical memos. You see that the first 3 we've been through, we've developed them. We've had discussions with staff and the project management team. We've gotten review comments. We've done our own internal QC, resolved them, and now they've been delivered to the city in final version. I think 2 of those are in your hands today. TMs 4, 5, 6, and 7. 6 are in progress. And we've got comments we've got to resolve, and we'll be wrapping those up directly. TMs 8 and 9, which are the final ones, are still in the development stage. Those are the last ones that we owe to staff, and we have not delivered those yet, but we are hard at work on those. All right, so with that set up, what I'd like to do now is just kind of walk through each of the technical memos and give you...
Just one quick question.
You bet.
We have TM number 2 and TM number 3 in front of us. Has TM 1 been released yet, or... did I miss it one day? I'm not sure.
You want me to jump in? So some of the technical memoranda we haven't provided. The memo 1 is a summary of the existing documents reviewed.
So
we didn't see the thing, there are a lot of topics we're going to be discussing at the meetings. We felt like it was most important to take kind of the handful that we felt like needed the most advanced review, get them to you first, and then you'll see everything in the final facility master plan.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure we hadn't personally missed it. We've not provided
that one.
And to further answer your question, my intent is to go through the next 9 or 10 slides, specifically give you a quick overview of each of the TMs and what they were focused on and what we have accomplished with those, okay? So, TM, excuse me.
Are we going to get another chance to review these technical memoranda? In other words, is this a dynamic interchange going on now and forever hold our peace?
No, not at all. In fact, the purpose today is really to start the input process from WRFCAC on some of the technical work for Facility Master Plan. Yeah. So what we see happening over the next couple of WRFCAC meetings, and in particular, you know, you have the Joint Council and WRFCAC meeting on the 17th, I believe, that will be a presentation of liquid treatment alternatives. The plan today is, so we're not expecting you to give comments on a document we've just given you, for example. Right. The plan is we give it to you. We hope you'll get a chance to review it before the next meeting, and you can come back with any comments or questions or concerns you might have. Yes. And so we want to be in a situation where we're kind of rotating a couple of more of the technical memoranda to you over the next few weeks as well, and you get a chance to, you know, a week or two to review those, come back with comments or thoughts or questions. So this is to start that.
Well, I know you're on a very, very tight schedule. In other words, very, very tight, and I didn't know how you wanted to integrate our comments, our thoughts into this process, and I'm sure that we've already pledged to not hold up the schedule, but on the other hand, it's very hard to make good comments on the wing.
That's exactly right.
That's correct.
Absolutely right. And Mike, help me out here. I believe the next time that we're together, we're going to focus specifically on 2 of the technically toughest memos, which is the liquid and the biosolids section, and we'll dive into those in a lot of detail. And you've had a chance to review those in advance of that meeting. So that's, we realize there's a lot to put on your plate here.
Yeah, and one correction to that. So the liquid treatment, we're going to have that public workshop on the 17th. So you'll have a meeting before that on the 3rd.
Yeah, that's right.
And the goal will be have another progress presentation for you then on where Black and Veatch is at that point.
Right.
And at that point, we should have had the biosolids memo to you.
Yeah.
For your review, and then the liquid treatment will, we'll be reviewing on the 17th.
A lot.
How far in advance are we getting these before the meetings, before we have to review them and discuss them?
So what we're attempting to do is give a 2-week allowance with how we're scheduling these. So in other words, if we give you today, we've got tech memo 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. If you see issues with that, please bring them back to the next meeting in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Mike and Steve, I think the only confusion is it says 2 and 3 final versions to the city. That's what I think is generating these questions. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Sorry for that confusion. That was not intended to mean that there no further comments are desired. We've got to have a collaborative effort here for this project to be successful. Otherwise, it's just not going to work. So. All right, so back to TM1. TM1 was a summary of the existing documents that we reviewed. You've already done a lot of work in preparation for this new plant. Things have changed over the time, but one of the first things that the Black and Beach team did was to go back with the input from the city. There was more than 40 documents of various types, studies and reports that were prepared previously. We went back through those documents. And we pulled out of it, and TM1 summarizes what our review identified as pertinent information that we thought would be beneficial to this team moving forward to develop the wastewater plant or the treatment plant at your new site. So the goal is to take advantage of the work that's already been done, certainly not to redo work, not to waste any money the city has already spent. But it also requires a fresh look because we're at a new site. There's new challenges. We took a look at the flows and the loadings. We look at the site layout is dramatically different. And just as a point of reference, I'll get into it a little bit later, but the conceptual, I want to stress the word conceptual. The layout that you were looking at earlier was purely a draft conceptual concept of how you might put the boxes of various components on a site. That's all it was intended to be. Certainly was not final by any stretch. We also are looking at treatment technologies, a wide range of those, and again, TM1 then identified what we needed to look at as far as this project.
Steve, one clarification too is I think the site plan he's talking about, that was really intended to be kind of an internal communication document between us and the property owner. That's the one that Mr. McElvain had brought to council meeting last Tuesday. So it's not a site plan that had been prepared for public review or anything like that. It was the big colored blobs on the property kind of a thing.
TM2, influent waste characterization, characteristics, flow requirements, effluent discharge requirements. Again, it's providing the loading that the plant will need to perform against over a 25-year planning period. Looked at a wide range of flow conditions based on the projections. Again, that provides a basis. You now have that TM in your hands, and that is a basis for some of the design decisions and the technologies going forward. Population on TM2 is based on 12,000 population in 2014. We were very careful to coordinate that with Measure F, as well as coordinate it with the general plan that's currently in the process of being updated. So all of those documents should be in sync with regard to the assumed build-out. We also got the tourism data from the PM staff, incorporated that, and we've also proceeded with a sampling program to, again, provide the latest possible information for the design teams in terms of selecting and designing the treatment facility. TM3 is, we talked about decommissioning the plant. We looked at the existing plant. Then you have TM3, I believe, in your hands. It looked at all of the components of the plant, what we could use potentially from that facility, which really there's not a lot of opportunity there. And then ultimately looks at how that site could be reclaimed for use. There's a cost estimate associated with that as well. TM4, on-site support facilities. This is the TM that has generated a little discussion already. What I have up here is a table that basically, what we did is we looked at two components for on-site facilities. There are the components that are required to support the plant itself, and there's things like an operation building, a maintenance building, a canopy for parking equipment and trucks, that sort of thing. We got to have an electrical facility, so we have standby power, potentially septic trucks receiving. These square footages and this space is required to support the plant function. So we need to allow space on the site for that. But then we had this additional list of nice to have. I mean, if we could do it, we would like to do it. And so on the other on-site support facilities are things like the corporation yard, solar farms, these other components It's our first look at this was to look at how we would lay the plant out in terms of space, the facilities we absolutely have to have to support that plant, and then is it possible, how might we configure it to make all of these facilities fit? So that that work is ongoing, but again, that's very conceptual level at this point. Once you get into the facility master plan itself, these are the TM development, which is a foundation for the work. In the facility master plan, all of these things get looked at in a lot more detail. TM5 is off-site support facilities, and this is primarily the new lift station and the conveyance pipeline, Force Main, Bryan, and Wetweather Pipeline, that'll be necessary to bring the flows to the plant and take flows away from the plant site. We looked at a number of potential arrangements for and sites for those facilities and narrowed it down to two sites that seem to have the most benefit, and then those two sites were refined even a little bit further. Let me just show you here. Here's a map that shows the eight initial sites that we identified in conjunction with the city staff and PM team. In a workshop setting, we discussed each of these, provided some ranking of the advantages and disadvantages, and I apologize, I didn't notice, my drafter can't tell my handwriting. We realized that's not Highway 101. Sorry for that oversight. I didn't see it until I'd already printed the darn thing, but anyway. There's the eight sites that we started with. We evaluated those in a workshop setting with the staff. Here are some of the criteria that we looked at associated with these. We looked at a whole range of things, trying to, again, identify which of these alternative sites had the most benefit to being continued on in the project. And we basically identified sites 1 and 5. But as we looked at those sites, we further refined sites 1 and 5 by tying them down just a little bit more. So you see site 5 here, which is just right, it's right across the street from the existing plant and the water treatment plant, and 1A, which is on the other side of the street, just where there's a shed located there, south of or west of the water plant. And this is why those sites were refined and why we think they're beneficial. You can see site 1A basically fits very nicely just to the west of the desal plant, and here we have site 5A, there's a 60-foot easement that the city has where you're able to use a linear approach and be able to fit that pumping facility inside the city's existing right-of-way. Yes?
I don't see off-site groundwater recharge footprint. Is it assumed that we are going to do groundwater recharge on-site?
Not yet, and that's part of that phase two work, is where that water ultimately goes, whether it's used for recharge. So that's not in. Black and Veatch's charge is to look at what would be required at the treatment plant site, so what level, based on the level of treatment we need for groundwater recharge. One of their alternatives is to determine what treatment process is required, but they're not handling that off-site pipeline and injection wells or whatever else might be required. That's not part of their current scope. That's part of that master reclamation plan. It's being funded 50% by that state grant from the state board.
Wouldn't you need a footprint if you're going to plan on groundwater recharge somewhere?
Yeah, that's correct. We will. But that'll really need to be determined by a hydrogeologist, and that'll have to be some site-specific studies once we start looking at where that could go.
Steve, while you're still on this exhibit, are there any potential coastal issues that may be associated with these locations? First Public Road in the ocean, hazards like flooding, the things that kind of were found wrong with the existing location could still be at fault with these locations. Has that been considered?
Flooding is certainly something that is of a concern. I mean, we are in the floodplain there, and actually even since this was done, as we've looked at the floodplain maps and studied it further, site 5A, for example, if you move further
away from the ocean towards inland on that within your right of way. Believe it, it doesn't look like there's a lot of rise out there, but there is some rise in the ground, and so that helps us in terms of a floodplain. We were considering those kinds of things, but conceptually, for where we're at this level, all of those things we'll flesh that out in the facilities master plan details itself. But this tells us we believe that these are viable options that we can look at further and find an answer.
And just for the benefit of people watching, these are subsurface facilities for the most part, or are they above ground?
There are going to be some above. Mike, you want to comment to that?
Yeah, there will be control panels, and there will be a generator that would be above ground.
Yeah, there's some portions.
It would be like a small control building. Mm-hmm. But not everything you see there in the boxes is above ground.
Well, certainly not. Right. Yeah, that was not intended to represent the footprint of an above-ground facility, but the space we would need to develop the ultimate project, including the underground portion for that element.
If you think of the city's lift station on Quintana Road, and down on the Embarcadero, adjacent to the Harbor Yard, those are typical of facilities that you would see above ground, the generator and the control building.
Very small.
Yes.
Above ground facilities, yeah.
I got a question. On your site, well, both site 1A and 5A, where are they in the flood zone at this time?
Yeah.
They are. Okay, well, part of the managed retreat for this whole exercise was to get out of the flood zone, okay? Now, when you look at sites that are in the flood zone, like a collection system, okay, isn't that, like, counterproductive to even look at putting a lift station in a flood zone that is going to collect all the sewage from the city? I mean, why aren't we looking at something even, well, like at the off-ramp, let's say, by the high school, by the south off-ramp of...
Those sites were looked at, mm-hmm. and as we evaluated them compared to each other, the advantages of being relatively close to where the pipelines are and tying in with the outfall and all those kinds of things, there appears to be some significant advantages here. I think we can overcome the other issues associated with it, but you raise a very good point. Maybe that becomes, from your perspective, something that we need to put more weight into.
Well, I've always been mentioning the issues of the collection system and the lift station. At one time, they were talking about putting it at the existing site of the wastewater treatment plant.
Right.
Now, the problem is during if there is a problem, you're going to have, if there's a problem with the lift station, you're going to have raw sewage, as opposed to like semi-treated sewage, you know, and. As far as the infrastructure goes, the infrastructure should be part of what you're integrating and looking at in your facilities master plan as per Coastal Commission direction.
Right.
So I just find it a bit odd that you're still looking at a major sewer infrastructure in a flood zone.
That is a really good question. Let me chime in on that one. So one of the issues we've got is we've got several trunk mains all coming to this location. And they're coming from, you know, up in Embarcadero, down Atascadero Road. So what Black and Veatch has done, and you'll see this in the draft master plan, is they had identified, we had 8 sites. A few of them were able to get out of the floodplain. I think sites 4 and 8. Maybe were out of the floodplain.
I believe they were, yeah.
But it was really hard to find a location right. anywhere along Atascadero Road right. where you wouldn't have to redirect, because a lot of these sewer lines, as you know, all have laterals. So the redirection of all those trunk mains to a totally new location out of the floodplain, you know, we looked at the Black and Veatch team put some profiles together to look at bringing those trunk mains back to some of these locations. But it would be extremely costly and very challenging to do that. Now, doesn't mean it's impossible, right. But part of the one of the challenges, though, is that's just where all the trunk mains, as you know, come in. I mean, that's where everything's coming in from both directions. Is close to the existing plant. So there are a lot you can do with flood proofing when you have a very small facility like what we're talking about, these relatively small buildings. And so what you know the current plan is that Black & Veatch is looking at raising slabs, raising electrical buildings, that sort of thing, so that we're not right at floodplain, we're a little bit above it. So they've looked at floodproofing and built that into some of the programming.
And the whole reliability issue is a very important one as well. Again, there's a lot more detail to be worked out on that, but in terms of standby power and redundancy and all of those sorts of things, we need a very robust system here because you've got sewage coming in under gravity. It's got to be moved by horsepower to a new location that's uphill. So we have to have a very robust and a very reliable design. You're absolutely correct.
I got a quick question. First of all, is it floodplain or floodway we're talking about?
Floodplain. There is no map floodway.
Oh, okay, so there is no map floodway through that area. What are you talking about having to raise the slabs? Are we talking just a couple of feet to get out of the
floodplain? It's relatively plain? Small.
So it's just a couple
it's
feet.
It's not major.
You're going to bring the head up and,
But it is fair to say that it does extend to this area and it does impact some of these sites. That's an appropriate thing to say.
Are you looking at like a dry well, wet well kind of a lift station, or are you looking more at just submersible pumps?
Submersible pumps primarily at this point. But again, there are components of that, the electrical, standby power.
But they're going above ground, up out of the
floodplain.
So
that's right.
Good deal.
Okay.
And so I appreciate the explanation because our reality is we have facilities in the floodplain, so how do we best deal with them? Are you also looking at off-site backup power then in some like sites 8 and 4 or elsewhere where, you know, instead of just raising slabs and having the facilities there, that there's some backup energy supply out of the floodplain?
I'm sorry.
Any location will have to have standby generation at the site. So we'll have
at the site, but off-site out of the floodplain as a way to mitigate issues.
We hadn't looked at that, but it's something we can talk about.
Okay.
But I think that's right. We need to have standby power regardless of any of the site that we choose. It's you've got to have that reliability to be able to assure that the sewage is delivered to the plant.
Yeah, right. So I'm just suggesting consider that standby power out of the flood zone.
Well, and, you know, maybe one thing to think about, so the current plan is we would have a generator at the site that would be raised up out of the floodplain.
Yes.
But I hear what you're saying on having it at possibly another location. We'll look into what
I didn't understand your question. I exactly understand it. Yes. We have not looked at that up to this point, but that is certainly something that can be looked into further.
Are you sizing these infrastructures with Cayucas in mind?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Are you sizing these infrastructures with Cayucas' flow in mind?
We are preliminarily sizing. We are sizing everything at this point based on the plant flows that we have from TM2, which is based on the city.
That's currently just the city, and then we'll have an analysis in the back of the facility master plan that does address city plus Cayucas, because that was a direction from council, was to look at that as an option.
Just to be clear, the way the city calculates their flows, they incorporate Cayucas' flows and then subtracts the average. Okay, now as you discuss the flows a little bit further along, I could just want to make a note that Cayucas' flows prior to 2003 are completely erroneous because of the flow meters
were not
working. And and Mr. Keel is well aware of that.
Yeah, we are.
I think Black & Veatch has a pretty detailed discussion in that Tech Memo 2 that I'd be interested for you to take a look at and see what your thoughts are on it, because they went through and tried to break that out and put a little logic to how they split out some of the Cayucas flows from that. So,
the only other question I had real quick, and it is more to you, Mike.
Yes, sir.
Should we be looking at these technical, like TM number 5, at this level of detail, or is this just an overview meeting where he's trying to bring us on board? I feel like we're getting into a lot of particulars without the actual memoranda in front of us.
The thing I would say, so for Tech Memo 5, the offsite support facilities, given the schedule for the full facility master plan, what we thought we'd do is bring back TMs 6 and 7 in full detail for you to review. We had not planned on bringing back TM 5 just because it's going to be in the full draft facility master plan. Everything will be. Yeah. But
this may be the only time we actually talk about it.
Well, you'll get another chance when the draft facility master plan comes out. And if you have further questions or want more information, we can bring that back.
Okay, thank you.
Since we probably won't see this technical memorandum, is it possible to include probably some what buildings would look like above ground? What you're speaking of, the part that's subterranean, the above ground things, the relationship to the flow, just so people can see that illustration.
We certainly can.
The other thing is that at site number 8 you show, that's a very sensitive cultural site. So just keep that in mind when you're going there, that it has some, it's very sensitive.
Thank you. And frankly, as we do our work internally, by necessity, as you probably suspect, we have to sketch these things up so that we can get our arms around what it is that, and the cost, and just the relative sizing of components. So we do that work. At this level, we were not intending to get in and we're into the details of all of those structures. It'll be part of the facility master plan, but we weren't intending to get into it at this level. We certainly can provide you more details, so if that was what you would like to have. Some of those details, too, will be done in conjunction with the CEQA work, with a lot of the other public outreach to look at architecture for everything. Yeah. So our goal with facility master plan is determine some of determine a lot of the technical issues, and then also put costs to them, and the ranges of costs that we'll look at we'll try to address things like the need for the architectural treatments. You will see some visual simulations of these as well in the master plan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just from my own background on off-site support, I'm not sure whether I heard what I wanted to hear about electric power supply to the facility. And I know that it's pretty common utility practice on critical facilities such as hospitals and police stations and sewer facilities to have two separate supplies coming in that are not dependent on each other. And this would be probably PG&E that would provide this technology, and how they would arrange it and what it would cost to do that to get it to the facility. Then you have an automatic transfer switch that goes from one source to the second source, and then you would dump into your generator. So that gives you a little more redundancy. And I didn't hear that, but I assume that this is it's pretty basic stuff.
What you're describing is something that is part of any critical structure. You're dead on correct, everything you just said. The most reliable source you can ever have is if you can have two independent power supplies from two different substations feeding a critical structure. Totally agree with you. I hate to keep saying it, that we're in the preliminary stages of this and we haven't gotten all those details worked out yet, but absolutely, that is part of the analysis and part of what the facility master plan will include. I apologize for not mentioning that earlier. You are correct. TM6 biosolids, again, I don't want to get into this in a lot of detail, but again, we looked at a whole range of alternatives. There was a workshop with city staff evaluating the approaches and the various technologies associated with it and the reuse alternatives. And again, that is a TM that will be provided for review in the near future. TM7, probably one of the most important ones that you're gonna want to spend some time on. Unfortunately, it's relatively thick and it's going to take some effort to go through, is the liquid treatment technologies evaluation. Again, we looked at a whole range of alternative technologies to address the various discharge modes that you potentially might have, ocean discharge, regulated by your discharge permit, unrestricted reuse applications, including avocado irrigation and groundwater recharge via indirect potable reuse. All of those things are evaluated
in TM7. The highest scoring alternatives, again, we looked at a whole range of them. I'm not going to go through them today, but we ended up with two alternative concepts that we are taking forward and will be evaluated in a lot more detail as part of the facilities master plan. And that is a conventional treatment alternative. Rob already commented on that previously, and a combined alternative with MBR processes. So let me show you what they look like. And can you see that? I guess we can pretty well see most of that, but again, what it is a conventional treatment operator with a SBR filter, tertiary filter, and then advanced processes as we need them, combined tertiary, which would be an MBR process, and then again, if we go to avocados or advanced, we would need RO and those kinds of processes. Everything on the site, our intent on the site layout ultimately is to, first of all, zero in on these and then have a site that's laid out to accommodate and provide flexibility to accommodate any of those processes. Again, this is not been, we have not gotten review comments back from the city yet. That is on the city staff and project management's desk for review. Once we have their comments, we'll incorporate them, and then I assume Mike will provide them, or yep, the city staff will provide them for your review.
And to jump into, Steve, that the SBR is a sequencing batch reactor.
Yep.
That's the biological step. One thing I wanted to point out is there's been some confusion from the public at some of the workshops we've had. The minimum level of water that this plant would produce is tertiary treatment with disinfection. That's right. Been direction from council right at the start. So that's the minimum level that will come out of this facility, is it will be filtered and it will be disinfected. So when we say conventional treatment alternative, all that means is it's not membrane bioreactor. It's what's called a sequencing batch reactor. And then it's followed by either membrane filters or disc filters. So it would be followed by filtration, and then it would be disinfected. So that's the minimum level that would ever be produced among any of the alternatives at that site.
So to be clear, is your direction from City Council wasn't for reclamation. Your direction from City Council was just to have tertiary treatment.
No, our direction from Council was reclamation. You're correct.
To have full reclamation?
The direction was phase one is, and I'll just... The council's direction was phase one is reclamation ready, but the ultimate goal is to reuse every bit of that water if possible at some point.
Okay, is it like if we're at the Rancho Colina site, isn't it, it's from a legality standpoint, we have to have full tertiary anyway, right, to be able to discharge?
Actually, you don't.
No, you don't.
You don't have to have that to discharge. You could have, if you wanted to, if you discharge to the ocean, you can have secondary.
Right, but if you want to discharge to the creek and recharge the aquifer or something, you have to have full tertiary.
Yeah, you have to have full tertiary for any of the options, the majority of the options that we're looking at in the master plan, the ones that we're dependent on for reclamation, like unrestricted irrigation, like right, parks or whatever, for food crops, all that sort of thing, we're typically going to have the tertiary treatment.
Right. And even if we went to there and didn't have a reclamation option and we did creek disposal, it would be tertiary or beyond to meet the basin limits. So there's really nothing less than tertiary or beyond tertiary that will work
right
for the sites we're looking at and the discharge regimes that we're looking at.
Yeah, because basically we're not going to, the goal is not to just dump water or wastewater into the ocean, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. That's the goal.
Right. Okay. There's also a strategy, a small task that we have to look at direct potable reuse, a strategy for that. There is no regulation with regard to direct potable reuse in California at the moment. There's a technical advisory group, study group, that's looking into that. Our understanding is that they'll have some criteria to the state the end of next year is the best information we have. Regulations may or may not be available, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, sometime in the future, depending on what your crystal ball looks like. So direct potable reuse is something that we need to plan for. It's something we want to understand, and we are using our best knowledge to address that so that we don't leave, a stone unturned, that we lay this plan out so that whatever option there might be in the future. I think what we're going to end up with, Mike, is going to put you in position where I believe the day will come. It's just a matter of when that day comes. That you'll have the infrastructure and the processes that the city would need to be able to proceed down that path, should you choose to do so. Yeah.
I have a question that's bothering me, yeah. And I'm trying to phrase it in a manner of which, okay, are you designing this master plan on peak wet weather flows, hourly, daily, monthly?
There was a whole listing.
To go up the hill through the treatment plant and back down?
Yeah. We have to have the hydraulic capacity to handle whatever flows come to the plant.
Okay. And how, we have a collection system here that's in dire need of repair. And flows that vary, that I know of, they go four times, sometimes over four times the daily average. How are you designing? I don't really understand how you're designing for that. If you're designing for peak wet weather flows, that means, and then you're designing a plant for 1.1 MGD.
We've incorporated, the TM2, I believe, lays out the flows that based on the historical records. And again, we did look at the more reliable data and factored in what would be appropriate with just the city's flows. There is a peaking factor that's calculated as a part of that. I recall that it's 2.75 or 3, something like that.
I think that's the peak day, and then your peak hour is about a 6.
About 6,
it's about,
yes,
a 5.5 or 6. Yeah. The thing I'll chime in, so to kind of jump in, what Black and Veatch is doing in the master plan and what we're all doing is we're sizing this plant to be able to treat whatever comes into it, peak hour, whatever. Now, it may not operate as efficiently at that peak hour. In other words, you might have more power cost for that 1 hour of the year than, you know, but you're designing the plant on the average or the max month basis to operate efficiently right around the ones. So it fully treats and it fully handles with redundancy that peak hour, but you're going to pay more per gallon during that 1 hour, but it'll operate very efficiently at the average flows, if that makes sense. It'll handle everything coming to it.
So you have a detention basin? Is that what you're designing? Or, I mean, you know, you got, well, you know, recently I went to a scientific study in Sacramento, and they were discussing El Nino and then climate change and sea level rise and all these things and the intensity of storms. So what I'm seeing is these issues becoming more and more of a problem. And how are we looking forward thinking and addressing this issue?
So holistically, the way we're addressing it is on the two fronts. We have the treatment plant designed to handle the peak factor, and then we're also using our methodologies that developed through our SSMP, our Sanitary Sewer Master Plan, to address the INI and correct that. It can't all be corrected in a day, but we have a methodical approach to inspect and repair lines throughout the city. The costs, I think what Mike is referring to as the flows increases, we may have to bring on more blowers. To increase the aeration of the tanks. And that's why we're looking at batch reactors, is it's more efficient to handle those peaks as opposed to a plug flow reactor.
That's a very good point. All right. And then last, TM9, organic waste treatment, just beginning to look at that. Fog and septage and those types of things. We owe the city staff TM on that. That's in progress. We're just beginning to work on that. But that will be delivered here.
One of the things I want to point out, too, is because I always want to try to bring us back to some of the council goals, just so you all see that we're doing our best to meet and address those. The energy generation, that's the big deal with the organic waste treatment, is if we could supplement some of the solids handling that's going to go on the site by bringing in, like, fats, oil, and grease, for example, you can generate energy off that. And so that's a pretty exciting technology. That's what's done at the city of Santa Barbara's wastewater plant and a bunch of others around the state now. So that's the kind of thing we're looking at there. What are the opportunities if we've got the space and can do it? How can we try to get some better energy generation and also provide a service to, like, local businesses, because getting rid of your fats, oil, and grease is from your grease traps if you're a restaurant is kind of a hassle.
I got a quick question, Mike. And it's in the organic waste side of it. I know recently, I think waste management is going to people separating their organic waste as part of what's coming forward. Do you honestly expect to see more going down the garbage disposal as a result of that? I'm just wondering if you're going to see not the historical amount going down garbage disposals once they have people having to go around trying to separate their trash, so to speak.
I don't know. It's a good question.
It's something you might want to think about, because it kind of makes me wonder. I could see people pushing more meats and everything else through the.
And I don't think Waste Connections has a program yet, but up in the north.
Well, they're going.
County,
that's where they're going.
Templeton does, and the city of Paso does.
Well, Morro Bay will have it soon enough. We just heard it on.
We just passed a rate increase to implement the organics collection program.
Right.
I think right after the start of the year that you'll get your little under the sink bin. To collect organics.
Speaking of on some of this, I don't know how organic it is, but I mentioned this about almost a year ago, and one of the opportunities is the honey huts and the like Alseptic that they go out and collect all that. As of right now, my understanding is there's no place in the county for them to discharge. They have to go to either Santa Maria or Soledad.
Yeah.
Is in your facility master plan, or this is, I looked at it like a opportunity maybe for the city to generate some income and an opportunity for us to be able to address this issue. And in following up on that, is that, well, let's just leave it, leave that.
Yeah. We haven't done anything with that up to this point, but it's certainly something that we can discuss further.
It's actually, and part of this organic waste treatment feasibility study is one of the sources is just what you're talking about, septage and RV waste. So they're going to look at that as part of this.
Yeah. Next steps. We need to get into the facilities master plan and answer all your detailed questions. You guys have had some wonderful questions. You're clearly very deep into this, and we appreciate that very much. I wish I had more of the detailed answers to give you today, but I assure you, you will have all the detailed questions as the facility master plan evolves and we start to put all of those components in front of you for your review and input. And we do really want that input. It is absolutely essential for us to all be on the, for us to understand what your wishes are and make sure that we haven't overlooked something as we finalize this project towards the end of the year and the beginning of next year.
Real quick, just to encapsulate the actual treatment processes, presently you're basically looking at an SBR-type conventional system with filtration at the end, and right. The other is the MBR system.
That's right.
Is that the two?
That's right.
Thank you.
And likely, and RO certainly is part of it because of avocado and because of IPR, you know, processes or goals that you want to have going forward. So all of that is being configured in terms of what the plant will ultimately have as part of its components.
Let me just ask first, thank you for the presentation. Is there any public comment on this item? All right, let's take that before we start deliberating.
Steve McElveen, there's two quick questions. One, where can you get the technical manual number one, or for the public, where can they get two or three? Is there a website location? That's the first question. The second one is on page 9 of the presentation. It talks about you're going to design this over a 25-year planning period. Okay, well, these facilities, we know the one we have right now has lasted for 60 years, part of it, and they've been doing a lot of repair, and I assume that most of this structure is probably going to last at least 40 years. What happens at the end of 25 years? If we now, I'm assuming we're going to continue to grow after the 25 years, is there a slack built into this plant, or are we going to have to redesign and add more facilities? That's the two questions I'd be interested in. Thanks.
Anytime you lay out a facility like this, you have to put a reasonable planning period. A 25 or 20-year planning period is very, very reasonable, very routine. The gentleman is absolutely correct that these structures, you normally design heavy structures like concrete structures, that sort of thing, buildings. These are 50-year structures. You know, pipelines might be 75 or 100-year structures, those kinds of things. Equipment is more like 15 or 20 years, and you factor that into the overall calculation and pricing of capital costs and O&M. The plant will be configured in a modular way so that as you get towards the end of this planning horizon, staff will be monitoring what's going on. They're going to see we're getting there or maybe we're not getting there. And you have an opportunity well in advance before you exceed the capacity of what is initially constructed to modularly in the space. It'll be all laid out so that you can easily do that, add additional capacity or treatment capability should that be necessary.
Okay. Yeah, and I'll address the availability of the tech memos. So Tech Memorandum 1 was a summary of existing reports. So we didn't provide that to WRFCAC or publish it, but it'll be in the draft facility master plan. We can provide it if WRFCAC particularly wants it, but it's not the kind of document where we went through and necessarily made a bunch of comments. We just reviewed. They just went through and said we reviewed these documents. Fairly short one. But Tech Memoranda 2 and 3 that we provided today, we can provide a link on the website. Rob, is that
yeah?
So we can make sure those are available to the public.
Okay, thank you. All right, any other public comment? All right, now we can continue on and ask questions to staff or Steve. Look to my left, see if you have any questions down there.
I was going to say, actually, I got all my questions answered as we went through the processes.
Yes, Steve, thank you very much. That was a really good presentation. On your technical memorandum number 4, on the on-site support facilities, does it have a site plan that corresponds to these areas you show here in this table, where these different, the footprint of these different things going to be on the property?
We have been working internally on conceptual arrangement of how we might position these structures. I mean, that's what a normal, if you're familiar with it, I'm sure you are, yeah, that's the normal procedure. You start out by looking at just the basic component, but then you got to fit it into the site in terms of grading and how much space and retaining walls. We are not that far yet. Okay. I mean, what we've done so far, we wanted to give staff an idea of just at the high level, here's what footprint we think it would, and we just used our judgment looking at the site as to how it might be work on that site. And I really don't want to make it more precise than that at this point. We have a lot of work yet to do before I'm prepared to show you here's a site plan that really works and it works out all those details.
Okay.
Can I go back and ask a question? Sorry. It came up as a result of what you brought up. Very quickly, I heard Steve McElveen make a comment about 21-plus acres is what's being needed, so to speak. And to you, Steve, adding up those numbers in that table, it's down around 4 or 5 acres. Because I assume it's not including the actual plan itself. It's just the buildings and parking lots and everything else.
Yeah, it doesn't include setbacks or access roads and that sort of thing.
Okay, but based on all these different buildings, if you had your complete wish list fulfilled, is 21 acres what you'd honestly be looking at?
So where that 21 acres came from is the entire kind of southerly portion of the Rancho Colina site, and then there's a couple of parcels off that site that are across the street that we are investigating for potentially groundwater recharge. At the early stages of our draft MOU, we added those in there. Those may be, if those work out for injection, let's say, perhaps there's another methodology, because we don't really need to build much of a facility over there, perhaps just an easement to get a pipeline and a injection wellhead over there would be sufficient. So,
well, the feeling I was trying to get is, if you're looking at the basic facility, let's say forget the courtyard and a few of the other items, the wish list ones I'll call them, are you looking under 10 acres to make this thing fly?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Mr. Woodson.
I have a couple questions. There's no question I'm a critical path guy, and Mike is heard me many times about this. And what is your next activity on the critical path for B&V to get your facilities master plan done on schedule?
Well, first of all, we believe we are on schedule. We have the resources, and we certainly have the commitment to the city and to the PM team to deliver on schedule. I think we've delivered all of our TMs so far on schedule. The TMs become the building blocks for writing the facility master plan and doing the details. Once we get concurrence from staff that, okay, we agree it's this process, we agree it's this configuration, you know, then we are also, it isn't on Mike's desk yet, but we have an outline for the facilities master plan. I want Mike to review that and approve it. Then we start filling in the blanks. I mean, we have an outline of what the facility master plan document will consist of. We start, each of the TMs are finalized, we start in parallel writing those sections. So it's all happening in parallel.
And you feel comfortable that
absolutely.
You're going
to post? I mean, I can control my side of the table.
Well,
there's timing. Yeah. We don't want to take time away from you. We need to know what your comments are. It's hugely important that we hear from you. And these questions are just wonderful. I mean, it helps us go back and we get a flavor of maybe some things we need to look at in more detail that are important to you. Yeah. So that's all good stuff.
I know that B&V is a big outfit, and they've got a very good rep worldwide, as a matter of fact. Would B&V be interested in, say, going the next step and maybe being involved in submitting a proposal for design?
Design build?
You know, the second step, or third?
I think we might be coerced into doing that.
Let me jump in at this point. So one of the things that will happen is when facility master plan is done and that's published, is we'll work with council. We had the really, I think, exciting workshop Saturday on the project delivery, where we went through all the legal terms and that sort of thing. But part of what will happen at the end of facility master plan is we'll give recommendations to council on what the project delivery approach should be for the different pieces and parts of the project. Lift station, pipeline, you're there for that. So there will be a down period there where the facility master plan contract will end. What we'll do is we'll take the information out of the facility master plan, we'll take the information that comes up during the EIR process, and then we'll be preparing procurement documents to go out for that design build.
Right.
If it's design build or for whatever other option it might be. I use the term design build kind of loosely, the delivery for the project.
Right.
So,
okay, Mike, thank you.
And Black and Beach
my
is
last
absolutely.
Question is very easy, but I keep hearing that this facility will have to be a zero discharge facility. And it seems like the site, even though it's a Rancho Colina site, is very steep and has a lot of watershed on it. Is this an issue of that is a design problem?
You always have responsibility for the flows that fall within your boundaries.
That you generate or that fall
right.
on your
That
on
fall
your
on your, within your fence. You're
and
responsible
you're supposed to
for
be
that.
Able to manage
and
those flows.
You have to manage that and deal with it in terms of a holding pond or, you know, some
But as
manner.
Far as a Rancho Colina site, this isn't a big deal.
It's nothing. I don't see it any. It's a challenge on every project, but I don't see it as something that is going to be insurmountable. You did ask a question about what the most critical. Probably I should have answered, and the correct answer is, any site selection issues are absolutely the critical path. If we have to take a, if we, the global team, need to step back and look at another site, that does have an impact.
Hey, Barbara, any questions?
Yes, thank you, Steve. This was very informative. I have a question or comment to both you and Mike. At the community workshop, I agree with you, Mike, there is some confusion amongst our citizens, and being that we're a citizens advisory, what will be very helpful is, as you mentioned, a high level intro in some of your documents. For instance, one of the comments was at the workshop, we don't have a project description. I believe we do. I could describe it in two sentences, right. But I think these are very good documents, and we should put them out on the website. But from the citizens, we still need some little bit more high level to try to dispel these comments at the time they're made, and not let this fester. You know, some of these comments we're hearing from citizens. I think
that.
You know what I'm referring to.
Thank you. That's a very good comment.
That's a good comment.
Part of what we'll do through the use of the website that'll be up. It looks like next month we'll get the beta up and get comments back from folks. But one of the goals there is to address some frequently asked questions, put a good project description. One of the things we want to do with the technical memoranda is the objective with these is to push out technical review for WRFCAC. That's really what we're doing right now. And folks in the public can review those, but these are going to be pretty technical documents. And so the goal really is for you all, for the, you know, technical, environmental, engineering folks here to give input. So I would say you may not see that in these TMs, but you'll definitely see some of that. You'll definitely see that in the intro of the master plan, and there will be an executive summary on the master plan that will be written for kind of that higher level communication. We'll hit that a few angles.
Okay,
though.
Thank you, Mike. I don't expect to see them in the TMs, but your comment when the question came up on the 8 sites and why are we going back to the flood zone, to me, that boils down very simply, financial and reliability issues. And the response to that is, yes, we can do some activities that will minimize the impact of being in a flood zone. So that's the kind of stuff we're looking for, and that I think we want to be able to give to citizens, or maybe, Mike, what I'm asking for is help us on the elevator speech a little.
Yes, ma'am, we'll do.
Okay,
thank you.
Also, I think we have to be careful what we call things. There's we're using project description in two different ways.
Yeah.
There's project the casual project description. We all can probably come up with something like that.
The layman's.
But then there's the more technical definition of it for that we'll use in the environmental document that includes not just the verbal description, but a site plan and everything else associated with that. It's more of a the details of the project. So in some way, we have a project description. From a casual user standpoint, we don't have a complete project description to bring forward for an environmental review document.
That's a good point.
Did I capture that, John, pretty well?
I think that's correct, and I think just the bigger picture is whatever we do, we need to explain ourselves whenever the public's going to get involved. But, yeah, formal project description, we're a ways away from that at this point.
Right, and even a caveat, this is a layman's high level. Summary.
Yeah.
Thank you.
A couple questions. do you, let's just assume, okay, just for argument's sake, if the capacity levels we find out 2 or 3 years down the road are not correct, in other words, undersized, as maybe these priorities of these infrastructure gets fixed and all of a sudden we have some, like, issues. As you know, we are a tourist community and our flows fluctuate, and I'm more interested in the standard of deviation during the daily and peak liver flows than the invariances than the actual averages. That's what I think is more key. Do you, as a consultant, or the consultants, have the part of the culpability associated with that, or is that cost, let's say, difference is going to be just put on the citizens?
So is your question, if we make a determination that the capacity is X and it turns out 5 years from after you, a short time after the plant goes online, that the true capacity is something dramatically higher than that?
Let's say we find out, like, maybe the plant's not built, maybe it's like 2 or 3 years down the line, and we find out, oh man, we need to build this plant a little bit higher. Is that just going to be put on the citizens?
The capacity that the system needs is the requirement of the system, and if we needed to add additional capacity to address whatever the city system is producing, then that would be a responsibility. I would think that would be a responsibility of the citizen. Okay.
The other question is, in this, you know, the owner of the Rancho Colina mentioned this started off at 5, then it went to 11, 16, now 21. In any of these analysis, do we have, there's an ordinance that we have, is 197, that requires the voter approval for any facility or any land to be annexed in that's not a direct use of the public. In that 21 acres, is this considered all that you don't need voter approval, or there's some parts of it that hasn't much met that?
Yeah, Mike, that's for you.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure on the specifics, but I'll look into that. But if you can, the ordinance 197, we're talking a county ordinance. We're talking, what ordinance are we talking
about? It was a city ordinance that required voter approval for annexing properties into the city limits. But it was, I think it was 1981, and it was... needed annexation except for territory for permanent public use. So if some of our land that we're looking for isn't specific for public use, then that portion of land would have to have voter approval, if you know what I mean. So that should probably, you know, it might, you know, have this wish list is fine, but we got to make sure that we follow.
We'll investigate that. Okay. I think the idea is, right now what we're contemplating, all the actions are generally public use actions. It's also relevant that the Rancho Colina site is actually designated recreation in the county, not agriculture. That may come into play as we investigate this, but we'll certainly look at that.
Thanks, Richard. I just have one comment. On slide 12, support facilities, the city WTP water treatment plant, I'm assuming, is the desalination plant.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Fairly large size, and it looks like any alternative for water reclamation facility is going to have RO. And not being an engineer, I might not understand this correctly, but is there consideration then, instead of having a standalone, which it looks like here, a standalone city water treatment plant somewhere on the site, maybe co-locating those facilities with the existing RO train so you're not having two separate facilities and you can consolidate some of that square footage? And especially if we're thinking of direct potable reuse in the future, those facilities would make sense to have them co-located if they're headed to the same place.
Yeah, I'll jump into that. That's one of the general thoughts we had with that, was that could be a possibility. You'd have to keep the train separate, of course, but it could be an advantage to co-locating that. And part of what Black and Veatch will do with the memo to look at direct potable reuse is a lot of that is looking at, well, how do you coordinate that with the existing city water plant, right? Either there or up at the preferred site.
It's a piece of infrastructure the city owns that we, if there's a way to take advantage of it and use it to your benefit in this whole configuration, we certainly want to explore that and make sure we haven't ignored something that might be beneficial to you in the long term.
Yeah, I'm very appreciative. We're looking at the wish list and doing our due diligence on all of them, so thank you for that. This is just receive and file and provide these comments, correct? So there's no action on this item?
Yeah. The only action with this item would be to review the tech memos, and if you have issues or questions or that sort of thing, comments, please bring them back to the next meeting.
I think we've beat it up enough. So. All right. Well, I'm going to close new business and move on to item D, committee member closing comments. Do we have any closing comments as we wrap up today? Jenny, you do? Go ahead. You do too.
I just wanted to mention that there's going to be a community workshop on Thursday, October 29th from 6:30 to 8:30. And it's basically it's going to be project update, brainstorm ideas and issues and provide feedback. And this is specifically related to community outreach. And it's going to be right here at the Veterans Memorial Hall.
Okay, thank
and,
you.
And I'd like to add on to that. Thanks for that reminder, Jenny. That's correct. I'm not sure if the flyer has gone out or been posted on the city's website, but we'll be publicizing it quite soon, and this is a good way to do it. Yes, next Thursday, 6:30 to 8:30, perhaps till 9 here at the Vets Hall. We haven't figured out exactly the structure of the workshop, but the intent is to get feedback just to inform this facility master plan process. It's really an extension of the discussion we're having right now, and also would like to note that last week or in the last few days, we did have a chance to talk to a variety of individuals, including some on the WRFCAC, interviewing in some depth about some specific concerns that also relate to the workshop. And actually, I'd like to thank a few of you who I did get a chance, Jenny and Dale and Paul, Valerie, talked to all of you last week. That was very helpful. And we're really looking to expand on that kind of input that we had next week. Thank you.
The only comment or announcement, I guess it is that Shoreline Calvary is having a light night and a Halloween alternative for the neighborhoods. And with the people with the kids, you can just take them down there. And it's on Halloween. And it's they're going to have a bounce house and everything. It's a nice community outreach thing, and it's a safe environment for a lot of the kids to at least and it's good for the parents. It gives them a chance to take a little break and have the kids get their candy in one spot.
Real quickly on the workshop Jenny just mentioned, I did post that on one of the social websites, the Nextdoor, Morrill Bay, Hills, or hopefully I posted that correctly last night. Secondly, I also talked to Debbie after the community workshop last week because there were some citizens concerned about Saturday workshops or evening or afternoons, and my feedback to Debbie specifically was we need to try all options of times that work for working people, seniors, and citizens in general. So I think she was very receptive to our comments, so that will be helpful.
Yeah, and we appreciate that too. We're trying our best to mix it up, evening, weekends, whatever it takes to reach the community. We obviously can't do all workshops at all times, but we'll do our best.
And you know, there were a couple comments that they didn't get a lot of advance notice on the first one, and as I explained to them, this is T1, and we're in a new process, and we're going to just work through this and give us a little patience, the intention, and we will take that feedback and give more notice. So
Okay. Well, I think we're going to adjourn this meeting, and we'll reconvene here, 209 Surf Street on November 3rd at 3 p.m. See you all there.